Welcome to First Post Masterclass, our latest podcast series where elite athletes break down their craft for you. My name is Vaibhav Shah and joining me in this episode is Grandmaster Vidit Gujrati. Vidit is ranked 22nd in the world and is number 2 in India. Hi Vidit, welcome to Masterclass, or should I say, well, Grandmasterclass. I'm aware of your affinity for bad puns, so I just had to get one out early.
Hi Vaibhav, yeah, that was a good start.
Today we'll be talking everything chess and we'll be delving deep into various aspects into what goes behind in the making of a grandmaster, from training and preparation to the person behind the super GM. Apart from the ranks, which I've already mentioned earlier, with its FIDE LO rating is 2726 right now. And to be called a super GM, you need to be rated over 2,700, right? Could you explain that quickly?
Well, it's not like an official term. Like a grandmaster is an official term given by the federation. But we have to make a distinction between a grandmaster and the elite, like the most elite player. So very few people are able to cross the 2,700 benchmark. So after that, whoever crosses it is... by the community called Super Grandmaster.
Great. All right. Vidit, you are 25 years old and it has been more than 7 years now since you have attained the GM norms. Do you remember the first time you played on the chessboard?
Yeah, I distinctly remember. I mean, I remember my first class where I went to a coaching center. I remember my first tournament which I played out of Nasik, and it was a very bad start. I mean, if someone had looked at me back then, nobody would have predicted me that I would become a grandmaster. And many people, my colleagues, they told me, because they really did not see me becoming a grandmaster, because my nature was such that it didn't have all the qualities, let's say, that people would think that which is required to become a grandmaster. So I have all these memories. And for example, first time when I went outside Nasik, I went for a tournament. I was 7 years old and I was very scared, like, because they were not allowing the parents to come inside the tournament hall and I did not like that. So I was like looking for my father, and okay, after first 5 moves, I just resigned the game because I wanted to just go see where is my father. So there were some stories like this, which didn't really like show a champion there, but I eventually overcome my fears.
That's interesting. You said you mentioned about the association of certain qualities with a champion or a grandmaster. Like you said, people did not associate that with you. What are essentially the qualities that you typically associate with a grandmaster?
I think it's a very dynamic factor, first of all, the qualities. It's not like you're born with it. I mean, there are certain things, genetics, which you have, but many of the things you learn over a period of time. Mm-hmm. I was very impatient in my childhood. So when you think of chess, patience is one of the first virtue which comes to your mind. But I developed it. And one of the worst things was, if I lose a game, I could not handle it. That was my biggest problem in my childhood. I used to throw tantrums and cry, and because I just could not tolerate the fact that I lost. So that's why many people thought, okay, I mean, how will he overcome? Because you will lose games. It's not like you are going to get away with it. But that also, other side of the coin is that I was very competitive. That drove me. Like, I lost. Okay, let me just work on it. I'll not lose the next time. And I put all that anger, I channelized all that anger into preparation. So I think you can, even if you have a negative, so-called negative, virtue or something, or negative aspect, outlook, you can just channelize it to improve. So the way I channelized my anger into preparation and motivated myself.
Sure.
Apart from that, I think there are very basic things, like you need discipline. Because you have to work. There's nothing is going to be easy. You have to work. You have to have discipline. You also have to have the ability to... Discipline is basically you have to do things which you don't want to do. Because we do the things which we want to do. It's very easy to just go on Netflix and watch a very funny show. I don't think it's a surprise, and many people easily do it. But the main challenge comes when you have to do a tedious task or a task which is not really you want to do. So that's what I would say is discipline. And keep at it, persistence, like you need, you will not get results immediately. So you have to keep going. So I think these are some of the important qualities that come to my mind right now, which so one would require.
These are the qualities you didn't have at all at the beginning is what you're saying. Most of them. Mm-hmm. And that is why you said that, no. You know, perhaps people didn't associate that I would go on to, you know, become.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things was anger and tolerating the losses, which I was not good at. I used to get angry only when I lost a game, like really angry. But I was disciplined. I was working hard because I was channelizing all that anger. I was motivating myself that, okay, next time it should not happen. It's too early to say in childhood, like what qualities you have. Like you have to grow up a bit to develop that.
Did you immediately fall in love with chess or did it happen gradually? The reason I ask you this is because chess doesn't come across as one of the most natural sports you would associate with a child. You would associate a child with, even though mm-hmm. we have several prodigies turning GMs as early as the age of 12, a football, mm-hmm. or if you're born in the subcontinent, a cricket bat or ball, or perhaps even a racket is handed to a kid as one of their first toys. Giving 32 pieces on a checkered board mm-hmm. just appears to be slightly odd, unless, I don't know, if you're born in Russia or, you know, the neighboring regions. So what was it? Did you fall for chess immediately or it happened over time?
I used to love all the extracurricular activities. So after I come back from school, it was very hard to keep me at home and my parents were doctors. So they had to find some ways to engage me in something while they were practicing. So that was one of the things. And I used to play many sports, like I used to play cricket and all the kind of street sports you will play in childhood. And I used to, what they did was, there was a game called Brain Vita. I don't know if anybody remembers that probably.
It's with the marbles, right?
Yes, it was the marbles. So yeah. What I used to do is I used to play that a lot in my childhood. And they saw that I have an inclination towards this. And I enjoy doing that, solving that marbles puzzle. Like you have to jump over it and you take the marble, something like that. So what is the next, like, you know, brain game, chess, of course, that's the one comes to my mind. And it was a little bit by accident how I got into chess. So it was not like planned or something. It was just one of the things which I did and I took a liking to it. And I think it's very different to say, like, difficult to say what is odd and what is not. Sure. Let's say if you're in Brazil playing football at the age of 3 is not odd. You can just, there's so much of culture there. Yeah.
Correct.
In India, playing cricket is not odd. But in Europe, if someone plays cricket, it is considered odd. So, you know, it's a matter of culture.
It's just that one of the first toys is always a ball or a bat. And sure. Bat in the sense, not in the sense of cricket. I mean, a racket. Just that you have to swing. There is not a lot of logic required for a child to play a sport. It's just for the heck of it or for the fun of it. Chess can't be played just by giving you the things. Yeah, go play. You need to know the rules, right? It cannot happen very seamlessly. Like swinging a ball or swinging a bat or throwing a ball or kicking a ball is a very natural sort of locomotive activity a child does, is what I was getting at.
Could be. I never thought of it so much to have like a very different perspective about it.
How much of a chess player, like a top level, a GM level player you are born with, and how much can you become by practicing and honing your skills?
I believe that luck or destiny or fate or something, whatever you can call it, plays a role. But the role is like 5%. Mm-hmm. 95% of anything is that you practice it and you develop the skills. Nobody's born with the skills. You know, you can have a tendency to, like, let's say, learn quickly or grasp some things quickly, but it's not like you're born with it. And you, of course, practice it and you hone your skills. That's my firm belief. So many of the things where I see myself, like, where I improved, was by deliberate practice. I was not good at something But I kept doing it, kept doing it, kept doing it, and I got better at it. So I think we are looking for an answer which would like give like which would fit everything, why this happened, why that happened. But it's very basic actually. You just have to repeat it over and over again so that you learn. Let's say I want to learn a software. It's not like I'm born with it. I just watch videos, watch tutorials, and I learn from it, and I practice that. There is nothing in life which you can't learn.
Yeah, correct.
That's what I want to say. That's the bottom line.
All the chess players need to have like super high levels of IQ, some unbelievable ability to calculate, imagine, and remember. Is it like a norm? Or at least they need to have some of those things. Or
I have not taken an IQ test. I don't know about that. And I don't even see the point of it, of taking an IQ test. I think the questions this which they ask are based upon logic, some mathematical questions. I mean, even if I get zero there, I'll still be good at chess. So I don't see the point of this IQ test. Maybe there is some merit to it, but unless I try it, I won't know. So
yeah, probably you should put to test, I think. Besides IQ, if IQ is not a yardstick, there has to be some ability to, you know, calculate and imagine. You have to be creative on the board, right? You can't just play solid all the time.
Yes, you have to have the ability to reflect. That's what I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say you went wrong in some game. You have to have the ability to reflect why it went wrong. You have to analyze that. That's also skill, I feel. It's not like I'm born with it. But when you do it over and over again, you get better at it. And also, I am a type of person where I like to think about certain things. Okay, how can I make this much better? Or why did this happen? Or something. Like, I'm questioning things. So basically, that's how I engage my intellect. So something like that. But I think this is a question more for the scientists to figure out what is the skill required. I can only speak from my own personal experience. I'm more reserved. I'm more introvert. So I'm occupied in my thoughts quite a lot. Something like that. So I'm thinking about things. Many times. I enjoy that, you know, space. Like, there are many people who get a high from interacting with someone and getting a high from that, or they feel very good and they're at their best when they do that, when it's a conversation or something. I'm more of a person, it's a mix, but more of a person where I'm thinking about some things, where I'm doing something on my own, something like that.
So you, in short, you would say it's not just the ability, the supernatural ability to calculate, imagine and remember and, you know, having a high IQ and all that. It is majorly the ability to reflect and learn and analyze. That's right.
Yes. I think, let's say if there is a kid now who's 7 years old, for example,
mm-hmm.
who is listening to this, let's say, okay, and he wants to start out with chess, he doesn't need to think that he has a super ability or not. If he just practices it, he can become a grandmaster with right guidance. And I can guarantee that it can happen. He doesn't need to have like super ability. He doesn't have to be concerned that I have some memory or I'm very smart or something. It's like any skill. You just have to learn it.
Got it. Now that we have fairly established what the basic requirements, what are the basic requirements in order to become a successful chess player, I wanted to understand what it takes to sustain at a very elite level. Even though playing in various tournaments in chess requires immense traveling, chess happens to be one of the only sports, if not the only, to be in a way unaffected by the coronavirus, as there is an alternative way to play chess, which is online. You can play professional tournaments. In fact, a lot of chess players did. Vidit was one of them, for which you only require a decent internet connection, which has been a challenge for some of you of late. Even your good friend Adiban bore the brunt of bad internet during the tournament, right?
Yeah, I mean, I also had internet issues. But chess has not been affected. And many people have learned the game of chess during the lockdown because they were not like so involved in it initially. But now when they have the time, they're watching the games and they find it very fascinating. I get many messages that during the lockdown, they've started following chess and They are completely loving it and they want to learn, they want to improve, and that makes me very happy to see that as a fellow chess player.
Sure. How have you been practicing currently? Is it just books, puzzles, playing with the colleagues online? Could you briefly take me through your training routine during this last few
Actually,
weeks?
In lockdown, I have been working harder than before. And that's what I would say. Previously, before lockdown, the stress was more related to travel. I was just jumping from a plane to another. That was very hectic. But now when I have time to myself at home, I've been like, when I wake up, first of all, I get ready. I have my breakfast. Then I immediately do some training, let's say for 2 hours or something. And my
Any
schedule is
particular
like
kind of
changing a little
training?
bit. I check openings because where I'm at my level, for example, I need to be on top of the openings, because at the top level, it becomes of, it matters more of minute changes, you know. It's not like if I solve a lot of tactics, I'm suddenly going to improve. I'm going to improve a little bit. I have to hone my skills a little bit, tweak them a little bit. You know, as they say that change comes in immeasurable units. So it's something like that. So very minute changes I have to make. Let's say I play tactics at a certain level. I solve tactics at a certain speed. I have to make that speed at least by 1 second. I have to improve it. You know, something like that. So I do that first 2 hours. Then I might continue for another hour or half an hour. Then I have my lunch. Then sometimes in the afternoon, I'm streaming where I'm playing chess online and I'm interacting with people or explaining the games to them, solving puzzles that time. Once I'm finished with that, my like guilty pleasure is to, I'm a very tech nerdy guy, if I can say so. So I like to learn some new skill. I was learning Photoshop for no reason, for no absolute no reason. It's not going to help me in my career, but just I have the itch to do so. I'll do that or learn some other software or something like that. And my physical exercises, I've started again. It's a hit or miss sometimes. Sometimes, you know, when you skip for 1 or 2 days, then you develop the habit, oh, I missed it yesterday. Let me, what happened? Doesn't make a difference. But now I've started to be more regular, more disciplined. So every evening I'm trying to exercise now.
Okay.
Take a bath and then I do my meditations in the evening. Previously, I used to do it in the morning, but now I do it in the evening. Then again, I have some games to play online, some training games. Again, some stimulator work. And okay, in between, of course, you interact with the family. Sometimes you have to do the dishes, but not much. But yeah, it's basically, I've been like working nonstop. I don't even take an afternoon nap nowadays. But I enjoy it. I mean, if you don't really work hard, you will be good, but you will not be like great or best of the best. If you have to achieve that, I feel you need to work harder. I would say in and about, I think, 6 to 7 hours of chess practice at least in a day, and a couple of hours exercising. Not very little, actually. I'm not like exercising at a very high level, to be honest. I'm just doing some things to not be out of shape. Some meditation, something like that. And you also, I've started like my YouTube channel, so some time goes there and stuff like this.
This is training, but how is this different to say 2 weeks before a classic tournament or before a rapid or a blitz?
That time is so intense.
Yeah,
that time you have to have like a single-minded focus.
Yeah, at that point of time, just if you can take me through that routine. Say 10 days are left for the biggest tournament which you're looking forward to. Maybe the World Championship.
I hate that. But for World Championship, you can't do in 10 days. You have to do it for 6 months minimum.
Okay.
10 days.
When are you peaking in its training? From 6 months, you're just at your peak? You have to be at your peak? In terms of training?
You know, the amount of preparation you have to do is insane. It's not like you can do it in 10 days. Chess is vast, yeah? It's huge.
When I said 10 days, I didn't mean you start in 10 days. I just wanted to know what it looks like 10 days before the tournament. Is it very intense, or is it by the time you are relaxed and you know calmer that okay, now it's done?
Okay,
it's because 10 days is equivalent to a last minute studying for an examination, right?
Yeah. So there are two ways to look at it. One thing is that you finish your preparations and you're more in relaxed mindset just before the tournament. That is an approach by some players. Whereas I'm more of an obsessive compulsive guy where I want to everything to be, you know, neat and tidy and perfect. So I'm still, even before the tournament, checking some things. So I fall in the other category. But yeah, let's just say I have a tournament coming up. Yeah, if I have a tournament coming up, if I have a training session with my coach, let's say. So it's minimum 6 to 7 hours of very intensive chess. So I wake up, initially have breakfast, 3 hours of practice, very intense, no breaks. Then in the practice, we look at various things. You check your games, you check your opponent games, you analyze what mistakes you made, what is your opponent's weakness, all this stuff. You, of course, improve things. You have your repertoire, what you're supposed to play and all this. That is first 3 hours. Then you have lunch break. Then we go for a walk. Or sometimes we do physical exercise. But not right after lunch. But usually we take a very brisk walk after lunch. Then, okay, half an hour break where you, if you are lucky, you can get a nap in. And then immediately after that, you again do a 3 hours training session. So it's a normal 6 hours working with the coach. Then in the evening, you do exercise. You work on your physical fitness. You go for a run.
Okay.
And in the end, there is also not everything can be done with a coach. You have to do some things on your own. You have to do self-study. You have to introspect. So maybe 1 or 2 hours there. So it's so intense that when I come back after all this routine at home, I'm so happy that I'm back home. I just don't want to practice sometimes after a while.
What does introspection look like? If you have to, you know, sort of...
So let's say I learned a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have to think about it like... or I learned some new weakness about my opponent. How can I exploit it? How can I make use of that? You're making strategy. You're constantly thinking about the game. You're so involved. And I think whenever I've had successes, I had like a clear mindset and very one focused mindset. I was not doing 10,000 things. When I do 10,000 things, my concentration is diluted. But when I have just one focused thing, but the problem is that you have to make sacrifices someplace else. That's why it's hard to do. But when you do it, you get better results.
2 weeks before a classic tournament, it's the same like it's before the Blitz, or is it different?
It is different because most of the tournaments which we play are classic and they require higher amount of preparations. Because in Blitz, it's more about your shape, how you feel. Are you sharp? Have you rested well? Of course, your main preparation helps, but other things matter more. Are you nervous during the game? Are your hands shaking? Do you feel fresh? Are you sharp? Can you see the moves quickly? You know, in Blitz, that's matters more. Or have you practiced Blitz more? It's less intensive. But classical, even a game is very hard to play because it lasts for 6 hours. The cost of a mistake is much higher. Let's say you play a beautiful game for 5 hours. You played all the right moves. And on the sixth hour, you make a mistake. And all that effort is down the drain and you lose half a point or you lose the game. Mm. So that takes a toll on your
nerves. Stakes
are much higher. The price of every move is high. And the skill required is more. Because you have to be precise. You have to be much more precise. In Blitz, you can get away with the bluff. But in Classic, the opponent has time to catch a bluff. So you have to be more precise, more accurate. That's a tougher game, Classical.
Sure. Do chess players hit the zone, quote-unquote zone, or they are always in a particular thinking zone? Likewise, how do you define rhythm, considering you've always have to preempt moves in a lot of sense?
One of the things which I think is, if I train well before a tournament, I feel good. I get that confidence or something from that. And I feel like, okay, I'm in my good shape, you know. I'm seeing moves, I've prepared, I've done everything what I could do, basically. So then I feel that rhythm, which you're saying, like, or the form that I see moves quickly. You know, it's a lot of things are also dependent on the mindset, just not the practice.
And how do you achieve that perfect mindset? Like everyone has their own methods. What are yours?
Exactly. Everyone has their own methods. So for me, I feel very good when I've practiced or when I know that I did everything that I could do for this and there's nothing more I can do. And then I feel at peace with myself that I'll not blame. But when, let's say I've been lazy, let's say I watch in an important tournament, I've been procrastinating. I've been watching YouTube videos. I've been going on Netflix, you know, taking it a little bit more casual. I'm practicing, but not at the same intensity. Then I'll feel guilty about it. That, I mean, I have no reason to complain now, but I had the chance, I missed it. So that is my thing. I don't know if anybody can relate to it where you're feeling guilty about this, but at least I do. So when I do everything I can, it's which is very hard to do, by the way, because like everyone, I procrastinate, I'm lazy at times. It's not like I'm perfect. I make mistakes, but if you don't, if you avoid repeating the mistakes, it helps. I mean, before the game, I'm thinking about the game and I'm completely, because let's say if you do something throughout the day, the thoughts come back to you. You're thinking about it. Let's say we have this phone call, we have this conversation. Later on during the, you might recall some of these things, which I don't want during the game, right? So I just am drawing myself in the game. All other thoughts, putting it aside, something like that.
Shutting
So
out
when I,
everything else, shutting out,
exactly,
canceling all the disturbances, and to achieve
exactly.
that is not very easy, is what you're saying.
Not at all easy. It's not at all easy. One of the good things about chess is though, it requires so much effort that you cannot do many things at once. So when you're calculating moves, you will be thinking about the moves. But the main thing is when you're idle, let's say your opponent is thinking, that's when all the thoughts come. Oh, what if I don't win? Or what if, what will people think if I lose this game? They'll ridicule me. Something like this. Or you
Wow,
know, all these
that
thoughts can
comes
come.
through, that goes through your mind while you're playing.
Yeah, the thing is, thoughts will come. If is it if I pay attention to it or not? You know, if I have the ability to shut it off, then it's just a thought. I didn't ponder over it. I just let it go. But if I start thinking over it, oh, what will they say? Someone will tag me on Twitter, you know, and how, you know how it is on Twitter. Someone will do this or that. And what if my ranking goes below? I'll not get invitations to other events or something. You can get these thoughts, but if you pay attention to it or not is the main thing.
So
And as
insecurity
I
is what you're
also
saying.
had this, no, it's just one of the things. Also, the nobody wants to fail. Like if you worked hard, you always want to succeed. You want to get good at something. What if I fail at this? What if this tournament doesn't go well at, something like this. So all these thoughts do come in my mind. You just
So
have to push
you
it
were saying
away.
something else, yeah.
I lost the train of my thought.
Shit. I'm so sorry.
So basically, I think I was saying about shutting myself off, and yeah.
How much does meditation help in it to achieve that? In the sense,
it
how long have you been doing it, and have you seen a drastic change, a visible change, if not drastic?
meditation also is one of the things which is tough to do. Like, I know many people will start out, but it's very hard to. It's basically disciplining your mind, that is meditation. And your mind doesn't want to be disciplined. It wants to run over all the place. It doesn't want to just sit there and do nothing, you know. Very hard to do that. So, basically, it's disciplining your mind, and mind doesn't want it, so it will kind of make you not do it. But I just tried to do it deliberately. So I've been meditating properly, let's say, since a year or two. Before that, I did meditation, but it was on and off, not really like proper meditation. But now I'm doing it quite regularly, and it has helping me.
Okay, so you
Also,
have
one of
seen
the
the
things which
benefit.
I,
Sorry, go ahead.
also one of the things which I do is like mindfulness. The term is used so often nowadays that it has kind of lost its meaning sometimes. But when you're actually mindful of what you're doing, it makes a huge difference. Makes a huge difference. And that habit, you can be mindful for 10 minutes, 1 hour, but to do it at a prolonged period of time, you have to continuously train your mind to be mindful. And then you can see its effect a lot. You won't say things which you don't want to say. You will notice that, okay, you're getting angry. You know, sometimes you get angry and you react immediately. Instead of that, you will notice that, okay, I'm getting angry. I just have to probably get away from this situation, or I'm getting restless. Okay, and just cool your mind off. So many things, you become more alert about how you are feeling, what you should be doing, and you know, stuff like this. So mindfulness has changed the game for me.
And you have been able to...
I'm still at 1800, 2000 level, if I can say so, when it comes to that. But I'm climbing the ladder. But in early stages, you see big improvements, you know. So that's where I'm at right now.
So 1800, 2000, you're talking in terms of chess ranking.
Chess rating.
Keep you balanced. Yes. Okay. Got it. We've spoken about the mind. Coronavirus doesn't hinder chess training in terms of playing the sport, but it does bother the physical aspect of which is involved in chess. Yes, there is a physical aspect involved in chess. Would you like to expand on how much of the sport is physical, and does a chess player's body go? And what does the chess player's body go through while playing a classic tournament for a long period of time, and how there is a need to be physically fit?
Yeah, I think it's a good question because it's misunderstood many times. Like, does chess require physical activity or not? It's just if you're sitting. From my personal experience, again, I would say that last year was one of the toughest years for me physically because I was having a health issue. Which I will not go too detail in, but basically I lost weight and that was causing me problems. And I was unable to focus during the games many times. Because, okay, of course, physical body is important. If you're feeling a pain, let's say shooting pain somewhere in the body, it will be very hard to focus, right? So it does matter. But at the same time, I would say that you don't need to be... you don't need to be extremely good at it. You need to have a basic level of fitness.
You don't have to be a freak.
Yeah, you don't have to be a fitness freak, but you have to have a certain level where you're okay, healthy. Basically, you need to be healthy and you need to have good stamina because that counts. Because you're playing 6 hours and they did a test once, like they had a calorie counter attached to the chess player's arm and heart, and we burn a lot of calories while playing chess. Like, one guy burnt in like 3 hours some 1,000 calories plus. So you know that it's burning a lot of energy, you know. So you need to regain that. You have to work out. You have to be able to sit there. Otherwise, you'll be exhausted physically. So you need to have a certain level of standard. It's not like just normal healthy stuff and okay, but a little bit higher than that. But you don't need to have like six pack and the best muscles or something. That's what I would say.
I don't know how much, say, a Mikhail Tal or a Kasparov worked out during their classic events back in the day. They did.
Kasparov worked out a lot. Oh. You have no idea. He was extremely fit. Extremely fit. Something which I've heard is like he used to, and he's so energetic. Let's say if you see a video on YouTube, there is a video where he's analyzing the games after he won the world championship. Okay. There's a guy and to him is explaining, you can just see his energy and passion oozing out right there. So he's very energetic person. So I also knew that he trains in Croatia and he has a sea there, he has a house near the sea.
Okay.
I mean, he doesn't own the sea, but he's a house near the sea. Sorry. Yeah, sure. So after a session, he goes to swim and he makes laps after laps after lap and is extremely fast. And a video also where you have seen he's doing push-ups and all this. And you can, he was a very, at very high level of fitness. Even Magnus Carlsen, he has six pack. He's extremely fit. He plays football for hours and I've played with him. So I know that he's extremely fit, like much, much better than an average layman. Like, you can't even compare.
But Mikhail Tal didn't care about fitness because it was...
Yeah, but it also showed in his career. Correct. He became world champion at the age of 21. He was drinking, he was smoking, and he was world champion for only 1 year. And after that, his career was up and down. he could not even get back to that level where near world championship, because he had like liver problems, health issues, and he could not play. He had to withdraw from tournaments.
Correct.
He was intelligent, he was smart, but his fitness took his career down.
Correct. So you can attain greatness, you can attain championships through your creative play, but sustaining would require a lot of physical help as well. Have you managed to restore that weight? We're not going to go into the health issue, but have you overcome the health issue now, whichever that hampered you?
Not really. I still struggle with it. Mm-hmm. And that bothers me a lot even now. Of course, I'm taking help of all the experts and doing many things to counter that. It has gotten better after the lockdown.
Okay.
Because one of the things was my lifestyle was not helping it. I was continuously changing time zones, flights. I was barely at home. My body was under stress. So in lockdown, at least it got some routine to deal with. Okay, it knows that you'll always be in Indian time zone. And, you know, the health I was eating, I'm a vegetarian. So it got affected when I was in China, let's say. I would not get vegetarian food. Something like that. So now at India, I'm at my home. So my food habits have improved. My sleep habits have improved. And my body is not under stress of like continuously being, tortured by travel. So it has gotten better, but it's not at my like peak or anywhere close to being back at fitness.
But so you've achieved those 10, 12, how many kgs did you lose and how many have you... Mm-hmm. gained back?
I think lowest was 13 I lost. Mm-hmm. I think that's, and I've gotten back 3, so 3 or 4.
You're back changes. On the recovery track at least.
Yes.
I wanted to talk about, we also mentioned it, but I wanted to talk about your particular style of play. Now that we've gone through the mental and the physical aspect of the sport, I wanted to talk the your style of play. I understand you were influenced by Capablanca, Kasparov, and who else in your own?
Yeah, life? I mean, Kasparov's winning and results inspired me, but my play is not like him, I would say. My first book was Capablanca. And I think in chess or in any other sport, your personality plays a big role. You know, there are some people who are naturally very aggressive, as a person. And that comes off in their chess style because they want to like go for the kill immediately. You know, they have that personality. I'm more of the other kind, on the other side of the. I don't know what to say. I'm just different player. I play more solid. You know, more things under control. I don't like complete like mayhem or like going for the kill from the beginning many times. I do that, of course, because to become a good player, you have to be an all-rounded universal player. But you have a tendency to do some things and your personality shows up in it. So, for example, let's say Adiban, Grandmaster Adiban from India.
Yeah.
His style is to directly go all in from the move one. Like, there is no break button. There's no break when he goes. It's just like you crash or you kill. That's how. So, that's his style. That's his personality. He's very aggressive that way in his chess. And he has that inclination towards it. Whereas mine is like, okay, more control, more like, if I have to give an analogy of cricket, then I would say Rahul Dravid type.
Okay.
Very like, stable.
but there are times where you, like you said, if you are to be a very good player and if your opponent is very solid and defensive and is prepared in a different way, you might have to change the course of your action and,
Yeah, I mean, it's not like
even Dravid ended up scoring 50 of 22 balls and one of the fast. I think he still holds the fastest record for 50 exactly. in India. So,
So the thing is, there is a tendency, certain tendency. It doesn't mean that Dravid can't hit a six. He would prefer to keep things more in control, Or Lakshman, he would still prefer to play test matches than T20. It doesn't mean that he can't hit the ball for six. So something like that. I have to attack many times. I have to play aggressive chess. If my opponent is solid, I have to defeat him. But you have a inclination towards something. And to become a good chess player, you have to be well, or like you have to be very good in all aspects. But we are humans, yeah? We are not perfect. So we have certain things we do better, certain things we don't do as better as we can, you know? So that's the thing. And that's what it makes it more fun. Like, you know, your personality shows up. That's what people like to see. Like when they see Kasparov, they know that he's going to go for the kill. Like they knew it, that he's not going to take a draw. He's going to just from move one, he's going to be at your throat, at your neck, something like this. Whereas Carlsen, they know that he is a player who is going to like manure, tire you and like play 6 hours. And you know that you're in for a torture that way. So that's what makes it more fun. It gives an element for the fans as well.
Probably he does that also because, and that is precisely why he trains the way he does outside chess in terms of physical aspect, because he knows he wants to play 6 hours. That is why, you know, he wants a ripped body or whatever, but he still ended up having loose motions against you. So
let's not go there.
No, I'm just kidding.
No, I mean, I think it's more of a liking towards sport rather than a need for this. I know, I've seen him. He likes to play basketball. He likes to play football. Football, he's a big, big fan.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he does this fantasy league, for example, mm-hmm. which doesn't have to do anything, but he's a fan of that. I love to play basketball. It doesn't mean that I do everything because it complements my career. I just love basketball. I love playing basketball.
So well, but if it doesn't...
It's also... If it works, it's good.
Yeah. So... Yeah, correct. It might not be planned that way, but it might be helping him in a great sense that way. You know, everyone are not suited. Chess players are need to be prepared for everything, but they might not be suited to play, say, a 6-7 hour game, which works better in Carlsen's favor.
Yes, yes. There are people I know who don't like playing sports, so they have to do some other things. They probably have to hit gym, or because it's also a need. Right. But some people do other things which automatically helps them. Sometimes they have to do it deliberately. That's the question. In Magnus's case, I don't think it's deliberate. That was my point.
Yeah. We were talking about your style. When did you decide that you are a D4 player, and how did it come about? Obviously, it must have taken a lot of preparation and, you know, training and something, but
in my childhood I used to play e4 a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I was taught, to play e4, and I went to some tournaments and I lost, and as I said, I was reflecting back then what was wrong. Maybe e4 doesn't suit me, those kind of positions don't fit with me well, and that's how I moved to d4 and I got good results. So that's what I said, this reflection helps. What went wrong, what not. So in my early days itself, I moved to D4 because in E4, you have to, again, this personality comes in, becomes a factor, because in those times when you used to play E4, it used to be a little bit chaotic game. Whereas in D4, it's more like controlled, more closed, more maneuvering, more like Magnus Carlsen style, let's say, to squeeze out or play long games, something like that. But with E4, there's a higher risk of losing, something like that. So that didn't bode well when I was young. In E4, there are more chances of having unclear positions.
Yeah.
Like Sicilian defense, opposite side castling. But in D4, it's very rare to have opposite sides castling. Usually they castle on the same side.
Okay.
So, you know, that avoids a direct confrontation. Like, you attack my king, I attack your king. So it's basically who attacks first wins. But in D4 positions or C4 positions, if you noticed, white never castles alongside. Black also never castles alongside. They both castle on the short side. And it's like a slow battle. So in E4, it's opposite. So that's why I didn't play E4.
Got it. How does a chess player recover from a stunning opposition move? How tough is it to stay in the present and not think about defeat? So you have prepared your preparation. Everything is going accordingly. Even the opposition has, you know, prepared his way of countering it. And you see a move which you don't expect. And that can happen. You have already thought of 10 moves ahead, 12 moves ahead. Sometimes you've not. Sometimes it's two moves ahead. I don't know what it is. What I'm trying to get at is, what if there is a stunning, spectacular move and you are caught off guard? Of course, you don't have the time to react in blitz or a rapid, but say in a classical, what do? You start from square one?
Yeah, it's of course unpleasant. Let's say many times it happens that nowadays you use computers for preparation and you can't match the computers. Like, yeah. It's like basically facing a calculator. It's like facing a calculator. You can't match it. So the opponent has checked the lines with computer, let's say, and he's playing moves and he knows the answers to it. Whereas you're trying to figure it out on the board. It's unpleasant and nobody likes to get caught in it. But okay, the problem is you have to deal with it. And it's... unpleasant.
Yeah,
yeah, it is unpleasant. And how do I, in my mindset, that time is just to try to make him uncomfortable as well. If he's blitzing out, it's not like it's impossible for him to know almost everything. Very rarely you can know almost, because chess is so huge. I can make an unexpected move, you know, throw him off the preparation or catch his bluff. Many times you can bluff out. So that's what is going in my mind. So I'm very objective that way, or very practical. There are two approaches. Objectively, I try to find the best move, or be practical and try to pose him problems. So I mix and match.
You were saying it could be a bluff, but it could be a prepared line also. Do you start thinking about all the possible lines that could arrive? Obviously, your mind does this, that calculations. It goes without saying, but you will end up sometimes missing something. You will end up catching it
easily. You will miss because you cannot match it. Yeah, that's why we prepare, so to avoid the surprises. But you know, it's inevitable to get them. Yeah, there are so many things to know. You can't know so all those the things. Yeah, somewhere you will get caught. You have to just minimize the chances of doing that.
Sure. And so my second part of that question was, how tough is it to stay in the present and not start thinking about the defeat? You know, you've seen something.
That is one of the toughest things. I think every chess player or any sports player gets this thought, what if I lose the game? Or what if it doesn't go the way? Let's say you're playing the final match and you have done a lot of hard work and you have to win, you know, and if you don't, everything goes away. So that's a unpleasant feeling, and every sports player can relate to it on some level. It's very, there's no like right answer how to deal with it. I'm still learning. I've not figured out. So also many occasions where I falter in the critical stages, and many occasions where I seize it. I'm still learning that way. But one of the things is, like many people say, to focus on the process, not on the end result. That helps in a way, because you can't control if you win or lose. But if you don't prepare, the chances of losing are more. So you have to just focus on the process, and you have to be very like zen-like that way, you know. Sometimes you have to be zen-like. You cannot let it affect you, the result. Of course, you want to win. Yeah, there's no doubt of it. That's why you're playing.
Yeah.
But it cannot like throw you off if you don't. So you have to be very like, what to say? Okay, if you win, you don't get too excited. If you lose, you don't get too sad. So you have to have that equilibrium. If you get too excited after a win, of course, you'll get too sad after you lose, because, you know, that's just how it is. So you have to train. You have to be very zen-like that way. I think that helps me. I'm in that zen-like mode, just being in the present or not focusing too much on the result. But it hurts. It's just how you deal with it. It hurts to not win. Just how you deal with it. You have to train again your mind. And we are not taught to do that. We are not taught to do that. It doesn't come naturally. But some people have... even Magnus, when he makes a mistake, I can see that he gets upset, you know. He claps his finger and, you know, like, you can see visually that he's upset. But also, one of the champion qualities is how you come back. Many times, he has lost a game and he has been able to come back in the next rounds. So, that's also an approach to whenever you lose, so to it's take away all that frustration in the next game. And it's a, I think there should be a study, you know, where they make some scientific, you know, data and they check this. I want to know how to exactly deal with it. What's the best way to deal with it?
Playing against a computer, a boon or a bane, you have to tell me one. You can't be like, oh, it's both. Does it stagnate the creativity of a chess player? Nowadays, with some unreal algorithms and, you know, patterns, it is virtually impossible to beat a computer, right? So,
yeah, no, I mean, playing with a computer is a very masochist thing to do. There is just like suffering, you know, unless you enjoy it, there is no point. But I would not play with computer because I know that I'm going to lose it. It's much more fun to play with a human. But I use computer as a tool. I use it to analyze my mistakes. I use it to find new ideas. That's the way I use it. It's like a tool which helps me navigate. It's not a playing partner. It's not my friend or something like that. It's just a tool which I use to improve my skills. That's how I use it. And it's impossible to, or very foolish even, to ignore it. Because your competitors are using it. They will have an edge, competitive edge. You have to adapt to the new tools. I think that's where, let's say, Anand, Vishwanathan Anand, he made a big difference because the players who were in 80s and 90s, you know, they were not brought up with computers. They were learning from books. They were learning with coaches. They were analyzing on board. But when the computer era started, many of the people from 80s and 90s could not adapt. They were like, what is this? You know, what is? They're like dismissive about it. And they could not adapt to it. And they lost the competitive edge because the computer generation, they were getting the information much faster. They were on top of the game. But Anand made the shift. Okay, I learned it this way. But you have to be flexible. I'm not like old school. I'll adapt myself. He also got acquainted with how to deal with computers and how to use them for preparation and stuff like this. So he was one of the first ones. And that's why even today's day, he's able to play. Whereas many of his players who were playing with him lost their level of their strength. Correct. Because they did not adapt. So that's what I'm doing right now. I didn't use engines so much, but now the AI has come, you know, the stronger hardware and much more data online. You have to play online chess. So you have to adapt. So you have to be very flexible with that. That's what I think. So computer is definitely a boon. It depends on how you use it. It hampers creativity if you let it. But also it could help you sharpen your skills.
So you didn't catch that. It's like a phone. It hampers creativity?
It's like basically a phone, you know. WhatsApp is great for connectivity. Instagram is great for connectivity, but if it becomes an addiction, it's bad for you. But if you use it to connect with people, yeah, it's similar, very similar. YouTube is good for sourcing information or having content, but if you're addicted continuously to it, it's not good for you. So it's something like that.
But Anand has gone on the record and say computer has spoiled it, has you know, sabotaged creativity in that sense. You can't play a near perfect or a beautiful game, you know, if you want to. Is that is that true? Till what extent?
First of all, like previously, they used to find ideas while analyzing on the board, let's say.
Correct.
Yeah. And the joy of finding a new idea by your thinking and finding it was great. You found something brilliant. But now computer finds it for you and it's basically you're sourcing the information from that and playing. So you don't get that superior feeling or very that highlight feeling that, oh, I found this, what a brilliant move. And even if you find a brilliant move, computer refutes it now.
Correct. So exactly, I was going to say that there will be a counter to it immediately.
Exactly. So that takes away that. And also when you're playing a game, you are a grandmaster, you are like an authority of the game. But now anybody who is sitting on the phone can put on the computer and say that you made a mistake. Oh, that was such a stupid move. Yeah, that's you know, true. So that has taken away that. But of course, it has shown how the chess should be played as well. Now, people play chess at a much higher level because they have learned from the computers. Because we used to think that this way of playing, let's say XYZ, is playing of chess is good. But the computers say no. But the ABC, you can also play like this. And we're like, oh, really? We are learning from it. So it has evolved the game. It has made it more accessible to people. So there are pros and cons, you know. It's a long debate.
Vidit, you were Anish Giri's second for some time. And how much does that help to be involved with someone from the top 10 and sharing ideas, notes, etc.? Could you also explain what your role was? And at what point did you draw the line and say, okay, I do not want to be a second anymore and work solely towards your own progress?
It's, I think, in any field, you know. Let's say you're a writer and you work with one of the best writers, let's say. Of course, if you're interning there, for example, or if you're working as an assistant there or something like that, you will learn a lot from him, how he writes, how he thinks, what is his daily routine, how he manages to break, the writing block or something, you know. You will learn many things. Writer's block, sorry. You'll learn many things like that. So that was the same. Like, I got to know how to prepare at elite level, how he organizes his training sessions, how he just goes on, what is his mindset when he's playing certain opponents. Something like this. So many things I learned from him. Basically, I upped my game after that because there were a few things, many things which I was lacking, which I got to learn from him. And I think it's in any sport, if you are helping someone in, let's say, any sport, like let's say tennis, you're being a partner of, let's say, Federer. Mm-hmm. Of course, you're going to learn because that's going to push you to work harder. That's going to push you to learn how he does it. So that's how it was. I was playing chess professionally myself. Mm-hmm. So as a trainer or as a second, you have to give a lot of time. Then you can't play professionally yourself. So you have to...
So as a trainer or a second, you are just trying to help Anish, or you are also building your... Both are happening simultaneously, right?
Yes, of course it's happening simultaneously. Let's say you cannot separate it. That what I learned for when working with him is only applies to him. No, I can use it to improve my skills as well.
Correct.
But the thing is, I could not be with him at every tournament because I was playing myself. So there are like, you can do for like 2 weeks, 1 month, 3 weeks, something like this. But you cannot be full-time trainer. I didn't want to be that. I wanted to improve in my own career as well. So I think it's very common to have these training sessions with higher rated players or like-minded people. But then you also face each other in tournaments, and we are approximately now same, like very close in world rankings. Like we play in tournaments and we face each other, let's say. He's still ahead than me, but we face each other quite a few times. So, yeah, so I decided to focus on my own career.
Of course, I learned from it. Decide to make that shift?
I've worked with him first, I think 2016 or something. Mm-hmm. And I think already in 2017, we stopped working together. It was not like entire year we worked, 2016. We had some training camps.
Mm-hmm. And then you were like, okay, now I need to focus on.
Yeah, I mean, even after having training camps, I immediately went and played my tournaments. Mm-hmm. So I was helping him to achieve something. That time I was completely with him. But when he played the tournament, when my task was done, I of course went back to playing professionally.
Okay. How secretive can a chess community be in terms of players not sharing, you know, their line of thinking, their processes? And could you explain why is maintaining this secrecy important?
I think in sports itself, you will not like to disclose your training, right? Because your competitors will get an edge. They will know what you're doing.
I think this is particularly applies for chess. I think in other sports, they do share a lot of their notes.
Could be. But in chess, somehow it is like, it's a mind game, you know.
Yeah, correct. How secretive is the chess community? Very, how much?
Community as such is hard to say. But let's say talk about professionals, top professionals. Let's say you have a world championship match. You will not like to disclose who is on your team. Mm-hmm. Because let's say they have me in their team. Let's say world championship match is going on and one of them is having me in their team to help them. Okay, if people find out, they know what I play. Let's say I'm a prominent, I have a specialty of certain kind. Hmm. Of course, if I'm helping him, I'm going to tell him, I'm going to teach him that specialty of mine. So they will be expecting it. They'll be prepared for it.
Okay.
Let's say XYZ is my specialty. When Magnus or someone is playing it, they'll be expecting it. They'll be ready for it. But if they don't have that information, they don't know what to expect. You know, there are only a few things. So that surprise value is gone and you automatically you get a lot of information if someone knows who is in your team. Mm. So in chess, that matters a lot. I think in chess, one of the things is the preparation levels matter much, much, much more than, let's say, other sports. Because, let's say, one day before the game in other sports, you're more of in a relaxed mindset because you want to be fresh, you want to sleep well. That's not the day where you perfect your punches or you increase your stamina right the day before. You warm up, of course. You heat up your body, you know, you get ready for the match, but it's not very intensive. But right before a chess game as well, we are learning about the game, we are sourcing information. And
even one day prior sometimes.
One day prior, even half an hour before the game, we are checking our notes. Even half an hour before the game, we are checking our notes, revising our lines and stuff like this because it's vast, yeah? So, in a tournament, it's very stressful for chess because you're loaded with so much information. Then you play a game. So, it's very stressful compared to other sports because training in other sports is, of course, hectic and, you know, training time. You work a lot, you build your muscles and stuff, but it's not right before the game. Right before the game, chess players are in higher stress imaginable.
Sure. This is the final question, Vidit. Thank you for staying calm throughout this. What are your personal goals that you've set for yourself in the coming 5 years?
I have not set any goals for 5 years.
Okay, short term then?
I think it's too far. Short term for sure. Okay, now my world rank is 22. I want to definitely, I feel like I'm close, but still far in cracking the top 5, top 10. I have to work a lot to get there. That is my aim. I have not set a time frame when to achieve it because it's now kind of uncertain. Yeah. If I achieve, let's say 6 months, but there are no tournaments in 6 months, I cannot do that. So I have not set no time frame, but my goal is clear what I want to do. That I want to improve my world ranking. It's 22. I want to come in top 5, top 10. And later on, for example, eventually everybody wants to get into the world championship cycle, which will happen after 2 years. So you have to prepare now to get there. It's same like, you know, in Olympics, athlete doesn't just train 3 months before Olympics. It's training goes on well before that. You improve your skills.
But surely every chess player dreams of being a world champion. You must also have that dream. You might be also having it. And like you said, you haven't decided a time frame, but you know, how long would you be able to sort of push yourself to, you know, to get it? Are you prepared for the long haul if it doesn't come your way? I hope it comes in the next 2 years time if it has to, but
World championship, I don't know. It's a many factors come into place, but world ranking for sure. I know that it is achievable given that I grind or I hustle the way I am hustling. But, you know, it requires persistence. It's easy to hustle for 1 month, but for 2 years to hustle, it requires a lot of persistence.
All right. That was great. You've given a very exhaustive interview. Thank you so much for this.
That brings us to the end of another episode of First Post Masterclass. We would like to thank Vidit Gujarati for sparing his time and sharing his insights and telling us what it takes to be a grandmaster. Hope you enjoyed listening to this episode and don't forget to tune in for the next edition of First Post Masterclass. Until then, stay safe and goodbye.